This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Timmy Abebefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
And welcome to the Lombardi Line, presented by DraftKings Sportsbook. In for Femi today, I am Dave Ross, alongside Michael Lombardi here at Circus Sportsbook, fabulous Las Vegas, Nevada. Michael, great to have you in town.
Good, thank you, Davey. It's good to be here. It's really good to be here to watch these. Sitting at the Circa watching all these games, how good is that?
It's heaven.
As the great Bill Parcells would say, it would take a lot of that to kill you. You know, I mean, so. It's fun to watch it. It's fun to see the reaction of the people and, you know, to look at the games. And, you know, I think it's really good. It's going to be interesting to see what the league office have. They haven't issued anything out on the Embiid foul, right?
Nothing.
They've gone radio silent on that. And I don't know how they can go radio silent. And I'm a Sixer fan, right? But I don't think he should get suspended for anything in this series, but I definitely think he should get suspended for games next year.
I mean, we're going to talk all about the NFL draft, but we got a guy tackling guys like Joel Embiid in basketball games, and we just go,
we don't even know if Mitchell Robinson could play based off of that. Now, I'm not saying that was the injury that caused it, but look, you know, that was fun to watch the games, and it was fun to be able to see the NFL draft going on. And this is always the perfect time of the NFL draft because, you know, if you don't follow Mel's board or you don't follow the board, and these boards are all over the place. I mean, you know, the Eagles take a defensive kid from Houston Baptist and, and many people thought he might go in the sixth round, but that's okay. You know, whereas some other teams, it's so difficult to see. But when Atlanta traded, two things struck me yesterday. Atlanta trades up to get a defensive tackle from Clemson who was third team all ACC.
Wow.
That would have not gone over for Al Davis in the draft room like that. Even though, you see, you have to remember something. When those guys started the draft back in the day, long, long ago and far away, they relied on sporting news.
Right.
They relied on sporting news and who was first team, second team. And he still did, you know. He wasn't going to take somebody who was not thought of very highly in his own conference, right? Mitchell Trubisky wasn't even first team all ACC the year he came out, right? And so, and then they take the kid from Clemson there. And then, you know, Tennessee, who gets rid of Tariq Tarrant last year, who's got, you know, who had some weight issues. Good player, but had weight issues. And then they come back and take another kid. This year, they take the kid Sweat from Texas, who's got the same problems and had a DUI.
And that's
and you're giving up valuable, valuable picks, David, at the top of the second round, which you got. What I don't think we spent enough time talking about, and we were doing this before the show, is you have to put down the number of plays next to the player's name when you're picking in the second and the third round. Now, today it's different because today this is they probably aren't going to impact the team much.
Rounds 4 through 7.
It's special teams plays. How many special teams plays can we get? But you pick in the top 50 players, how many plays are we getting out of this guy? And if you got a weight problem and you have troubles behaving off the field, it's hard.
And I do wonder, and you know this, obviously this is your world, when you're getting into rounds 4 through 7 today, and I know everybody feels like it's the calm after the storm, right? We're through the first 2 days, first round on Thursday, and the two rounds yesterday, rounds 2 and 3. Are you guys now as GMs, are you combing over the leftovers, or are you looking for your team plug and play? A guy that I can go figure out number of plays, handful of plays, whatever it's going to be, not necessarily value, but your positional needs.
No, you're looking the horizontal board probably comes more into play here than ever.
Okay.
So that's the horizontal board. So like you take, the Booker kid from Kansas, the edge rusher. I don't think he went yet, right? I don't have him going as yet. And so when you look at that, or the Doris defensive lineman from Oregon, you know, those guys are pretty much high up there. The cornerback Tampa from Iowa State, you know, these are guys that are pretty much thought of in this third round, and they didn't go. And they'll be the ones that go. And then you look at, you know, you kind of have to see, can we get this? And I'll say this to you. This is where you make your money as a personnel man. You find George Kittle. You find Shaq Mason in the fourth round. You find Trey Flowers in the fourth round. You know, you get these guys that come in and become starters at cheap economic value.
Right.
You know, that's really what you have to be able to do.
I want to talk a little bit about, again, you gave some of your evaluations from yesterday. I want to talk about one team in specifics and just see your thoughts on the Buffalo Bills. And we saw what they did trading out of that first round on Thursday, getting their receiver in the second round in Keon Coleman with the 33rd overall pick. And I know there's a lot of consternation out there. Boy, you trade out and then the Chiefs get the burner at the end of the first round. Chiefs, Bills kind of feels like a rivalry. Hard to have a rivalry when one team keeps winning whenever you play. But what do you make of what the Bills front office and what they were trying to do there to get more picks by moving out of that first round?
Well, they didn't have a clear consensus of who they wanted to pick. And you can talk about Worthy running fast all you want. You know, you got to run an offense. You got to run plays. You got to run a passing game. And he's a gadget player right now at 160 pounds. If he's your slot receiver, how are you running the ball? He's not blocking anybody at 160 pounds. And I don't want to hear this nonsense that he was Tyreek Hill. Tyreek Hill played running back in the Southwest Conference, okay? The Big 12 now, okay? He played running back. He was hard to tackle as a running back. He was an elite running back until the off-the-field incident forced him to get thrown out of Oklahoma State. He was elite. Andy did a wonderful job of making him a slot receiver. He was never a receiver. He was a running back, and it was hard to tackle then. He was a powerful man. He had that track upper body, you know, whereas this kid's 160 pounds. You can talk about how all power he wants. So this guy's a role player, and I don't think that Buffalo were looking for a role player. And then you have to look at your draft board. You say, okay, you know, there's eight receivers we all have clustered together with the same grade. Why not take more picks? And we get Coleman. I mean, Coleman was a good player. They picked him. I mean, it's the same thing what I thought. You know, now, Ladd McConkey is a really good player that the Chargers picked.
Yeah.
But he's got, you know, I think the only thing that kept him out of being in the first round was the injuries. He's had some injury history to him. So they get Coleman. Now, here's Troy Franklin, sitting right there at Oregon. And everybody had him in the middle of the second round, and he hasn't gone. So is that because of a medical, you know, which I didn't have a medical on him. So that's a guy that just sticks out like a sore thumb. He's one of the few players that are left from the on the board that was thought to go in the second or was had second round reality that will go probably at the top of the fourth here.
Have positions changed, the value of positions changed in the NFL with the way the game is played? Obviously, running back is one that always sticks out that, you know, I can go back to obviously to the Emmitt Smith days back in, you know, 1990 when he's coming out and he's a first round pick. And we've seen the LaDainian Tomlinson's top fives. So you see those guys here and there that pop, even the Saquon Barkley's not that long ago going top five. But we just don't see that much anymore. Are there just, that's got to be an outlier like a Bijan last year?
Yeah, well,
going
he
top
was
10?
Bijan, the reason why he shouldn't have been picked, you know, they should have taken Jalen Carter, but that this team is just refuses to have defensive players. I don't know if they pay attention. I think the whole front office in Atlanta must go to the bathroom when their defense comes on the field. I mean, they're last in sacks over the last 5 years. They were 29th in creating turnovers. I mean, they must all leave and go to the bathroom during or go get to the food line before everybody else does in the press box. Look, here's the like the tight end position, right? The tight end position is completely different today than it was 5 years ago. 5 years ago, 10 years ago, Mark Bavaro and those, you had to be an on the line Y, Gronk, on the line Y, dominate the run game and then and make plays in the passing game. Well, that player became extinct almost.
Mm-hmm.
The dual threat of that player, there was nobody could do that, you know? And so what's happened is now we have what we call big Fs. Brock Bowers is a big F, right? He's a big receiver who plays in the side. Kyle Pitts, that's all he is a big receiver.
And block.
You know, he can't block anybody. Right. They think it's a joke if he, you know, he's not blocking. So that's where the game has changed, and you have to do an adjustment to that and see how that works out. Because here's what happens. If you have a tight end that really can't challenge the middle of the field, it becomes so easy for the defense to defend him. That's where Kittle becomes a problem. You know, he can do both really well. And if you can't do – whereas Kelce is an elite receiver.
Mm-hmm.
Kelce's a slot receiver, and I think Kelce deserves a world of credit for not demanding to get this wide receiver salary, because that's really what he is. He's an elite receiver. And, you know, he's never really made the case to become an elite receiver.
Yeah, you mentioned the Falcons. And again, I had a ticket that got burned. I had Dallas Turner under 9.5.
I wish you would have asked me that, David. I would have told you not to take that pick.
I just assumed the Falcons at 8.
Well, that's because everybody, these mockers, kept having it. And he was, to me, it was always between Latua and Murphy. I had Murphy as the number one defensive player coming off the board. From everybody that I talked to, we'll have Chris Sims later in the show today. He'll tell you the same thing. He had that the same way. Now, we both had Worthy, we both had neighbors over Harrison as the number one receiver. I just think Arizona went safe and took Harrison. Not a bad pick. I'm not arguing that at all. But there were certain positions that you just knew. Latua, if he could pass the physical because of this fusion surgery of his neck, he was the best rusher in the draft. And Murphy was by far. I mean, Seattle got, at the 16th pick, Seattle got on most people's board the best defensive player.
I just can't believe that's where we started drafting.
Well, you got teams like Atlanta taking a quarterback after they paid $100 million. You got the Bears who obviously they just think they're just – how many plays will Rome Odunze play next year?
He's the third guy, right?
So are you an 11 team? I hate to break the news to people, but it does rain and windy in Chicago. And if you're in 11 and you have edges opened, right? I mean, you're not going to be able to be in shotgun in 11. You're going to have to line up. And I mean, Buffalo has already gone through this. Buffalo spent the last 5 years trying to be an 11 team in Buffalo, and they couldn't do it. Now, Cincinnati gets away with it in Cincinnati with Burrow and their receivers. They get away with it. I get
that. But they try to run the ball, right? At least they did.
They can't. They can't run the ball.
They always try. It's never that successful. It is fascinating because you look at Chicago and you go, boy, that'd be a great team on turf and a dome.
Right, but they can't block it. I mean, who's the right tackle? Who's the left tackle for Chicago? Wright's the right tackle. They drafted him in the first round. They don't have two edge. They don't have – if you're going to be an 11 team, you better be really good at tackle. You better be really good at tackle.
This is why I love these conversations with you, especially this time of year.
Yeah, this will be fun.
This is going to be a good one. Let me come back. Let's talk about those quarterbacks. We had six quarterbacks that went in the top 12 picks. We'll kind of break them down and what we see in number of plays we might see some of these guys playing. Come on back. It's the Lombardi Line here on Visa.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Timmy Abebefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Each and every day, check it out, VSiN.com. We've got expert picks, analysis, betting strategies, the latest odds, trends, links to VSiN's top reads, latest podcasts, everything to get you ready for your betting day. Bill 80 does an amazing job each and every day of getting your newsletter out there. So when you wake up first thing in the morning, you check it out like we do here at VSiN, VSiN.com. Sign up for free, VSiN.com/newsletter.
He is the wordsmith of VSiN. There's no question.
You know, I don't know if Bill sleeps.
Yeah, he doesn't. No, he writes. I asked him. We were watching the games the other night, and I said, Bill, when do you write that damn thing? He said, I write it usually at night after all the games are over with. I love to write, but I can only write in the morning. I can't.
Really? You can't write at night?
I don't lie. I'm not very good at night. I can edit at night. I just can't write at night. I don't have, like, I wake up with ideas and I try to get them on the paper, you know, when I write my columns or when I write the Daily Coach or those things. But I can't really, in the afternoon, I have an idea. I write it down and research it, but I don't write it.
Bill is, again,
amazing.
You got to get the newsletter if you don't have it. As a VSiN Pro subscriber, you got to check it out because it is fascinating each and every day. And you're right. He waits till everybody's done, everybody else is sleeping, and Bill 80 is cranking that baby out. We know that it's been a historic draft already because when you have six quarterbacks taken in the top 12, maybe you saw this coming. I didn't see this coming.
I did. We said it on the show. Actually, Bill 80 and I were sitting there. We were watching the games, and we said it. I said there were going to be six, and it was the better play to take Knicks under 34.5, and that number moved to 32.5. And then obviously the Penix number.
He was at 32.5 as well before.
The great Stormy, she got that number and she moved that number down to where it became minus number. You know, I mean, she moved that completely. So that was fun. And then, you know, when I came in on the day of the draft, JVT and Tim Murray, Tim did a great job with us on the GM Shuffle. They came in and basically said that, I said, look, I think there's going to be six in the top 12.
In the top, and that
I don't agree with it. I'm not saying,
but that's what
that's the reality of it all.
And by the way, we're gonna have another great quarterback. Rich Gannon's gonna join us in the next segment, so we'll get Rich's thoughts on what he's seen
so far. Rich went in the fourth round,
right?
This is how much the game has changed. Rich went in the fourth round, and the New England Patriots tried to make him a free safety. They drafted him as a free safety
out of Delaware.
He was such a good athlete, they drafted him as a free safety. And he was like, I'm not a free safety. And so after the draft, Minnesota traded for him. he never played for New England.
Right.
They traded for him and then he went there. But today, had Rich Gannon did what he did at Delaware and the way he played at Delaware and his athleticism and how fast he ran, I mean, he's better than J.J. McCarthy was at Michigan.
Wow.
There's no, like, that's like, that would be the similar. They're both 6'2", they can run, but Rich's arm, his rhythm, his instincts. And, you know, in 1986, he's a fourth round pick. Today, he would have been a first. That just shows you the. And even though the game is changing so dramatically in terms of we're throwing the ball more in college, the reality of it is the value has gone way up.
It is fascinating. And I get it. I understand why teams reach for quarterbacks, because, as we all know, it's the most important position that you have out there. You're always searching for one. It's hit or miss. Certainly probably less than 50% when you draft first round quarterbacks. But when you do look at this crop to come out now, and obviously Caleb Williams, number one overall, we saw the 1-2-3 go with Jaden Daniels, 2 to D.C., Drake May going 3 to the Patriots. Did that just have to be what a GM has to do? They can't buck the trend. Everybody said these are the guys you got to take. Did they get that right in that hierarchy of 1, 2, and 3?
Well, I think, look, I think Caleb, is not the cleanest player on the board. He's not generational, is what we want to make him. There's concerns about Caleb relating to his teammates. There's concerns about Caleb being, you know, the right guy and off the field. But on the field, he's a very good football player, and he is the best quarterback on the field. Now, those other intangibles that are so vital to a quarterback position have to come into play. May's a project. I mean, Drake May's, I mean, that's why they signed Jacoby Brissett for $8 million. He's going to play.
Right.
May needs a lot of work. May needs a really good quarterback coach, you know. And see, here's the issue. May needs time, and Alex Van Pelt's the offensive coordinator, but Alex Van Pelt's going to have to spend time developing Brissett and the offense as they go in there, whereas Ben McAdoo, who they hired as a special, he's going to be the one really working with Drake May. Mm. And they're going to have to spend a lot of time on that. And then, you know, when you get down to it, I think Jaden Daniels, they're going to have to figure out what's the best offensive system for him. He's got to have outside receivers, which he does in D.C. He does have McLaurin's an outside receiver, can catch the ball, you know, and so Dotson can catch the ball outside. They're set up for him. And they obviously have done a much better job protecting. I thought they had a good day yesterday with the draft. They got a tight end in the draft, the kid from Kansas State. They got a really good defensive back from Michigan. I think they did a nice job. So, and they've added a lot of players to their team. They've improved. I think they've passed the Giants in terms of that. Now, they've got to get the quarterback to play at a high level, because what Daniels is very good at doing is Daniels is very good at running with the football. But where Daniels, and like when Daniels takes off to run, he doesn't look to make a play down the field. He just runs.
Eyes down.
He's running. He becomes a running back. Mm. What you want is your quarterback to become a thrower on the move. And they're going to have to work on him with that. That's really the biggest concern.
Can you teach the eyes up out of the pocket and say,
look, I'll give you the perfect example. Milroe at Alabama last year. He, you know, early in the season, Milroe would just run. And, you know, when Texas went in there and beat him, Milroe was just a runner. And by the end of the year, Milroe was looking up the field. You know, and this is going to be interesting to see Milroe this year because Milroe has got a lot of Josh Allen qualities. He's huge. He can throw the ball a mile, hard to tackle, you know, never going to be a rhythm thrower, never. But when he's on the move and if he's looking up the field, he'll get the ball to anybody.
You know, it is fascinating because you mentioned out of the top three that Drake May's not going to play right away, right? But Caleb and Jaden feel like day one guys. Is there a right way to go? I guess ideally you'd like a guy, not like Patrick Mahomes, to sit a full year behind Alex Smith. I don't know how advantageous that truly is. I guess it can be.
Yeah.
And obviously we've seen different ways. Troy Aikman got thrown right into the fire his rookie year, got beaten up, goes on to win 3 Super Bowls. But like, what is the best? Is there a best way for these rookie quarterbacks to sit and learn, or is it trial by fire?
I think like you take Bo Nix. He's played so many collegiate games. He's going to go in there and play. He's going to go in there and play. And Sean Payton's going to be able to manufacture the offense around what he can and can't do. And so when you have a lot of experience of playing, see, Drake May's only played 2 years.
Right.
So he doesn't have a lot of games. I mean, Parcells used to believe you wouldn't draft a quarterback unless he had 37 starts in college football, which I agree with. And Jaden Daniels has got a boatload of starts, right? Jaden Daniels. So they're starting Jaden Daniels. They're going to start Caleb Williams. He's got a bunch of starts too. And they're going to start Bo Nix. Now, J.J. McCarthy and Drake May, they don't have a lot of starts. And we know Michael Penix isn't going to start, even though he has a lot. See, that's where the Penix pick is really fascinating.
And he's going to be 24 at the beginning of the year.
Yeah, and he's going to be a guy that, you know, he's ready to play right now.
Right.
And he can't play. He can't play because he's, you know, they spent a... See, everybody's confusing what Atlanta did as making something about the pick. It's not the pick. Penix is a good pick. I always thought Penix was going to be a first rounder. I never thought he was going to... I mean, I couldn't imagine somebody... The guy threw the ball too well on the third level to be a second round pick.
Right.
He was way better than Will Levis. Like, if Will Levis is 33, Bo Nix is better than Will Levis, right? Michael Penix is better than Bo Nix. Better than Will Levis. Just look at their career numbers, right? And so that, to me, told me that why all through March we were saying bet over the 4.5 because all it was going to take was Penix to be the fifth one.
That's it.
And we knew Penix was going to be in the first round. So, and it was interesting that no one moved the number to 5. You had to pay a lot of juice for it, mm-hmm. right? But I think to me that where Penix is, it's not the Penix. It's the inability of the front office of Atlanta to marry their free agency to the draft.
Right.
Like, you had Penix at 8 no matter what. You would have had him at 8. Nobody was jumping ahead of you to get Penix.
So if you knew that, right, that's what makes the Kirk Cousins signing so perplexing, right? If you knew that the Penix is going to be our guy, nobody's going ahead of him to get him at 8 because everybody's talking J.J. McCarthy.
And you can't hide behind the shield of, well, we want to win now. C.J. Stroud won for Houston now. They won the division last year. He was a rookie.
Yeah.
Penix comes in with more starts than C.J. Stroud did. So why are they getting away with hiding behind that shield, right?
Yeah.
Like, if you – but the problem is the Atlanta Falcons front office never were intending to draft Penix. It was Zach Robinson and Raheem Morris that came in from the Rams, and the Rams like Penix that kind of got them on it. Terry Fontenot would have never picked Penix. He got talked into it. The guy running the draft in Atlanta now is Raheem Morris. You can see that pretty clearly by who they picked.
It's absolutely fascinating. Again, Rich Gannon is going to join us here in the next segment, too. So we'll get his thoughts on these quarterbacks, 6 going in the top 12. But very quickly, you don't think J.J. McCarthy necessarily is day one starter in Minnesota, right?
Sam Darnold. I think, look, a lot of it's going to have to come down to on the field and what happens. But I would say Darnold beats him out, yes.
Yeah, fascinating. All right, stick with us because when we come back, we're going to have Rich and we're going to have another quarterback. Chris Sims is going to join us in hour number 2. So a lot to get to here on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Timmy Abebefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Dave Ross, Michael Lombardi here at Circus Sportsbook, fabulous Las Vegas, Nevada. What a pleasure, Michael, it is to have Rich Gannon join us here. Does a great job in SiriusXM. Love listening to him there, and also a great job as an analyst with CBS Sports. Of course, a very accomplished quarterback in the NFL himself. Rich, thanks for joining us here as we get ready for day 3. Michael was telling me, I didn't know this, I remember you coming out of Delaware. They wanted to make you a DB in the league. What type of DB would you have been?
A bad one, I can tell you. You know, I tell young players all the time, and, you know, first of all, great to be with you, Dave and Michael. You know, you think about where everybody starts in this profession, you know, and even Michael, you know, you get into this business and you start at the bottom, right? And you have to kind of work your way up. And I tell young players that you just want the opportunity. That's really what you want. It doesn't matter where you're drafted necessarily. You just want that opportunity to have a chance to play and compete at this level. And that's what I was looking for. Unfortunately for me, I got drafted by the Patriots. I was so disappointed the night of the draft because I remember getting a call from Dick Steinberg, who was the general manager at the time, and Raymond Berry, who was the head coach. And they had just played in the Super Bowl against the Bears in 85, after the 85 season. And so, you know, they called me and said, hey, we're really excited to get you. We think you're a great athlete. And you start hearing that athlete word thrown around. And then they dropped the hammer and they said, you know, we just want to find the best position for you. And I thought to myself, are you serious? I mean, I played quarterback my whole life. I never played a play of defense in high school or college. Here's an NFL team taking me as a, you know, defensive back, special teams guy. I thought to myself, you know, I've never worn a set of shoulder pads like that. I never really had to learn to tackle anybody. And I just thought, you know, I wouldn't make the team. And so I was going to go to law school. I called the Patriots the next day and told them they made a mistake. And 6 days later, they traded me to the Minnesota Vikings. And that's really how my career got started.
Yeah, it's funny, Rich. I was just telling Dave, when you watched you at Delaware, I know you ran the Delaware wing tee and all that, but your game, you were dynamic and you could run with it. You know, back in an era where people were criticizing quarterbacks who ran with it after it, instead of throwing it, right? Like today, right. You played better collegiately than J.J. McCarthy did. And you went in the fourth round and people were thinking about transferring you over. And now we have guys who play 2 years a little bit and, you know, all of a sudden they're first round picks. It's kind of ironic how we've gone the long way over, huh?
It is crazy. I mean, five quarterbacks in the top 10, I mean, the first 14 picks, you know, you have all offensive players. We've got six quarterbacks that go in the first round. I mean, just, you know, and Michael, you and I have had this conversation. I just don't have first round grades in all these guys. I mean, you're looking and you're searching, trying to figure it out. And, you know, we say it all the time, when you're so desperate for help at that position, that you're going to make exceptions. You're going to make excuses for some of the deficiencies that these players have. And we see that a lot, but you know, I'll tell you a great story. And I don't know if I ever shared this with you, Michael, but my senior year at Delaware, right before the draft, it may have been a week before the draft, Mike Holmgren called me and he said, I want to come in and work you out. And he said, Bill Walsh made me come out here to work you out. Now think about it. Mike Holmgren did not want to go to Delaware, University of Delaware, travel all the way from San Francisco, fly into Philadelphia, rent a car and come down and work me out. He worked me out. And then I think just the day before the draft, a couple of days before the draft, of course, the 49ers made the trade with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers for Steve Young. And I knew at that point that you know, I was not going to go to San Francisco, but had they not made that move for Steve Young, who knows? Maybe in the second round, I would have wound up in San Francisco.
I'll add to that story, Rich, because I was carrying Coach Walsh's books in Indianapolis in 1986. There were no book bags yet, and I was carrying his notebooks, and he stopped short in the Hoosier Dome there, which was the RCA Dome now, whatever the hell it is, and he watched you because you were servicing the receivers. You were going through it. And he watched you for a good 5 minutes. And he leaned back to me and he said, go tell Holmgren I want him to work out that kid. And Holmgren was so mad at me. He used to call me Tipper. He said, Tipper, you just did that. You just did that because you like the kid because he's from Philly. You're going to make me fly all the way back there to do it. And I think if we didn't now, just so we're aware of this, the vote to make the trade for Steve Young in the room was 0-25. He didn't get a vote in favor to make that trade. No one voted in favor of that other than Coach Walsh, who walked out of the room and told me to go pick him up at the airport because he had already made the trade. He was going through it. But
look how that turned out.
Let's talk about, like, where do you have a home in Minnesota. You watch the Vikings closely. You know all these teams. How do you see rookie season for J.J. McCarthy?
Well, I did sit down with Kevin O'Connell prior to the draft, so I know that they really were looking long and hard to try and find the quarterback. And I think they fell in love with J.J. McCarthy. And maybe not so much, Michael, in terms of what you saw on the field at Michigan. I mean, he's, you know, we can use throw that term around, he's a winner, but I think they fell in love with the personality, the makeup of this kid, his physical and mental toughness. And I think it's a pretty good situation for McCarthy to come into because they have Sam Darnold. Coach said that they really like what they've seen from him so far. And Michael, let's be honest. I mean, Sam Darnold, you know, if you just put him through a physical workout, we'd all like him, right? Yep. You'd say he throws the ball well enough, he moves well enough, he's athletic, he's, you know, smart guy. He checks a lot of the boxes. The one box he doesn't check is ball security. I mean, the turnovers, the decision making is not a strong point for him. So, you know, I think Kevin says, well, let's bring him in. Let's work with him. Let's see if we can't fix some of the deficiencies that he has in that regard. And then we've got this young quarterback that we really like in J.J. McCarthy. We don't have to throw him in there week one if he's not ready, and we can bring him along the right way. And I just think that's a pretty good situation for the Minnesota Vikings. And I think he's a guy that'll grow on you. When you look at J.J. McCarthy, I think he moves around well enough. I think he's anticipation. I think his accuracy. I think you look at him situationally. When you look at the 2 minute, you look at red zone. You know, the thing that was so impressive, I studied a lot of his tape. in 15 games last year. In 13 of those games, he didn't throw an interception. Now, that's pretty good. I mean, you know, you understand. And listen, the Minnesota Vikings, I think they were minus 12 last year, guys, in the plus-minus turnover ratio. Yep. What's done them, man, is the turnovers. And it's not just the interceptions. They fumbled the ball like nobody's business.
Mm-hmm.
So I think he went out and got a guy that's been with Jim Harbaugh, that understands the importance of ball security, that has been coached the right way. And I think he's a guy that has some pretty good habits that they can kind of cultivate in Minnesota.
Talking with a guy that's was in the league for 17 years as a quarterback, Rich Gannon. And Rich, I was in D.C. when Robert Griffin III was the second overall pick, Heisman Trophy winner out of Baylor. And then the fourth round, they took Kirk Cousins that same draft. And you could feel that consternation, certainly as that rookie year went on, which was a great rookie year for RG3. And now you look at what's happening in Atlanta with Kirk Cousins, and he said he was kind of caught off guard by this. They apparently called him right before the pick. That dynamic is a little bit different because Kirk was a fourth-round pick. Now you got the eighth overall pick that's going to be looking over your shoulder here. How is that dynamic going to work out just in that quarterback room with those guys?
Well, I think Kirk Cousins is the right guy. I think he was obviously surprised, but you know, he's a really good man. You know what I mean? He's a good family man. I think he's going to be, I think he's not one of these quarterbacks that says, hey, that's not my job to help develop the young player. I think he'll be really good with Michael. I think it's a good situation. I would have done it myself. I think it's, you know, you spend $100 million, whatever, on Kirk Cousins, and now you bring in the quarterback that's supposed to be the future. You know, but you also have a quarterback that's 36 years old that's got an Achilles rupture, so you're not sure about his ability to play all 17 games next year. So look, I'm not going to criticize. I really like Michael Penix Jr. coming out. I think, you know, you talk about a guy that can throw the ball from the well, he's really good. I think the injury concerns are real, but they saw a young quarterback that they like and they pulled the trigger.
Yeah, no question they did. And look, he can throw it on the third level. He's going to be impressive watching him throw. Let's go to the Raiders. Like, how do you visualize the Brock Bowers pick being formulated into this team with a little bit of the concerns in the offensive line?
Michael, I kind of like it from this standpoint, and maybe you and I don't see eye to eye on this one. In years past, I always got the sense that the Raiders like needed a cornerback. So, dude, we're just going to go get we're going to get the guy that we think is the best in this round. And in this situation, even though they had needs along the offensive line, even though they have some needs in the secondary and even at the cornerback position, they said, you know what? This kid is too good of a player to pass up, and we're just going to go get Brock Bowers. And I did some work on him as well leading up to the draft. I mean, he is a dynamic playmaker with the ball in his hands. Great after the catch. I mean, he's got some of those qualities and characteristics you love at that position. When you think about the ability to attack in the middle of the field, the people say, well, they already have a tight end. They spent a second-round pick last year on Michael Mayer. But I think this guy's a different type of player. And I think, you know, the ability to utilize both tight ends, I like that. Trying to get some more playmakers for the quarterbacks that they have. I think it's a good pick. And then they circle back in day two, and they get Jackson Powers Johnson. They get Delmar Glaze. I mean, you know, whatever your grades are on them, they're trying to improve the interior of that offensive line, trying to be a more physical football team up front. They need to do that. I think they're trying to get the best players available, but I like what they did in the first round. I think it surprised a lot of us. I was in Las Vegas for the draft, and I was surprised, but I was pleased overall.
Great job, Rich. Thanks so much. Appreciate you.
Thanks for joining us. Yeah, the Progressive Guest Line. And boy, for a MVP in the league today, I wonder what Rich Gannon would go for today. Is it, what, a top five guy in the NFL? We appreciate it, Rich. Enjoy the rest of the draft. When we come back, let's talk about some trade rumors that we heard and trades that were not made. That's next here in the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Timmy Abebefe, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Do not miss out on any of the NBA action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament, which was exciting, all the way through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has got you covered with same-game parlays, live betting, odds boost, and so much more. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app. Use code VSiN. New customers can bet $5, get $200 back in bonus bets instantly. That's by using the code VSIN only on DraftKings, and the crown can be all yours. Back alongside Michael Lombardi, Dave Ross here as we continue the Lombardi Line. Great having Rich Gannon on in the last segment. Going to have Chris Sims join us in hour number two. So get a lot of quarterback flavor on this program today. But what I love, and with somebody like you, you know how this works with the rumor mill, right? Yeah. And like all the conversations and the trades that are going to happen that don't happen. Then you get the after stories of this call was made, but it didn't work out that way. There are reports out there. Albert Breer wrote this on Friday that basically the Vikings had been offered the number 11 and 23 picks, and it's 2025 first rounder with picks swaps favoring the Vikings as part of a proposal to basically move up to three with the Patriots.
Yeah.
And then the Patriots also were getting calls. Kevin O'Connell and Brian Daboll were the coaches that were very interested, obviously Minnesota and New York. And because it was those coaches, Kevin O'Connell and Brian Daboll, they said, you know what? Then we're not going to move it. Yeah. Like, does that change the opinion for who's calling?
Well, I think, you know, look, you have to look at it that way. Okay. You know, when you are sitting there and you're the Philadelphia 76ers and Danny Ainge is trying to trade you Markelle Fultz.
Ah.
Don't you wonder why he's trying to get rid of him? There's a great scene. There's a really great scene in the movie The Offer, which is about the making of The Godfather. And in that, Charlie Blundholm is who runs Paramount. He owns Paramount. And they had bought The Godfather for $10,000, the rights to the book. And so they get a phone call that day from Jack Warner, and all the accountants are in the office, and so is Robert. I forget his last name, but anyway, he's in the room too. Robert Evans, he's in the room, and he's the guy pushing to make The Godfather. And so as they're going through this, Warner gets on the phone with Blundholm and says, I want to buy The Godfather from you, and I'll pay you $1 million. Now, all the accountants in the room go crazy. Sell it, sell it, sell it. And Blundholm hangs up the phone and says, what does Jack Warner know that we don't know?
Mm.
And that's what you have to say to yourself. What does Brian Daboll know that I don't know? What does Kevin O'Connell know that I don't know? And then that may be, they may not know, right? They may not know anything, but you've got to ask yourself that question. They see something in Drake May that we see, but they see it a hell of a lot stronger than we see it.
Mm.
And maybe that did push him over. I think the bigger issue in this turning down the trades wasn't the Daboll love or the O'Connell love. I think the issue in turning down the trade happened to be, if we trade away from this, we're not getting a quarterback. I think Elliott, who's really wired in the league, he knows. He knew that if he went down to six, he could be in jeopardy of not getting one of the guys he likes. They like J.J. McCarthy too. Okay? They like J.J. McCarthy. So if he trades, say he trades with the Giants and goes from three to six. Now, he knows Arizona is going to be open for business. And can he make something happen with Arizona? And I don't, you know, and he couldn't. So he would have to go from six to four. And how much was that going to cost him? What was that price?
I'm fascinated. We just had a great conversation with a former Raiders quarterback and MVP in Rich Gannon. When the Raiders saw what happened with Michael Penix, is that when the panic set in? Because you're doing that musical chairs.
Oh, set in at the Raiders. There's no question. Because the Raiders, now, we don't know this, and I haven't been able to get this confirmed, but I don't think it's true. Like, remember, Minnesota traded up just one spot
to
get McCarthy. And we talked about this on the GM Shuffle on draft day. That's freezing the pick, right? So what happens is when you're getting ready to pick, when you're one pick away, and you really need the guy you want. Like, you really need that guy. You can't have somebody jump in front of you like Sean Payton witnessed when the Chiefs jumped in front of him for Patrick Mahomes.
Right.
Okay? So what you do is you freeze the pick. You call the team up. You say, look, we'll trade with you. We'll give you this. And they'll say, well, we have an offer to go. Well, we'll give you this. You're only moving one spot. You're picking up basically more than that. And Joe Douglas convinced the Vikings that he could have traded down, whether that's true or not. But for a fourth and a fifth round pick, see, people get all caught up in that. You could add fourth and fifth round picks. You know how you add that fourth? Just steal somebody off of their practice squad.
Yeah.
Right? There's a fifth round pick. There's a sixth round pick. You know, steal them. So that's what happened there. I don't think it would have been the Raiders going from 13 to 11 or to 10 because McCarthy didn't fit. I think the Raiders wanted Penix. And I think the Raiders probably were shocked that Atlanta took him. Now, they say Atlanta, and Atlanta's saying this too, that Atlanta was getting calls to trade down, which I don't doubt they were. But nobody anticipated them. They weren't getting calls because they thought they were going to pick Penix. They were getting calls because they thought they would move down and still get a defensive player.
That's a surprising thing, right? Because the Falcons had said, we like Penix. So that was kind of out there.
Which is perfectly fine.
Right, but there was never the inclination that, well, this is going to be the pick at eight.
Well, but to remember, Adam Schefter wrote a notes column on Monday of draft week and said that the Falcons, that we knew, I knew, that the Falcons had spent a lot of time on every quarterback.
Wow.
But I thought they would be in the Spencer Rattler business, not the Michael Penix business. Because, it goes back to money.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're going to spend $100 million on Kirk Cousins, you can't draft somebody who's not going to play. And you guaranteed 3 years of the contract, right?
Yeah, and look, for neither here nor there, but I did think coming out of this, Bill Belichick doing, you know Bill so well, seeing him do work on ESPN, seeing what the Falcons ended up doing, hearing the news that they didn't even consider him for the head coach, I thought, boy, talk about winning the draft. It was Bill Belichick.
Right, but remember, he didn't get the job because they felt like he wasn't going to be collaborative enough. And this is what you get in collaboration. This is what you get in collaboration. As I say many, many times, they've never dedicated a monument to a committee. Okay? If you walk around Washington, D.C., you don't see the key fob or committee poster as monument up there, right? You don't see that. You don't see the Warren Commission committee up there as honoring these men who served on the Warren Commission and lied to America. You don't see that, right? You know, you see a man or a woman that's done something to move the socially element of our country. And I think, to me, people are scared of Belichick and, you know, his presence on television, his intellectual capability on televisions will only scare him. I mean, the most ridiculous thing of all is the fact that I'm a Super Bowl winning GM, and Kaiser Sose McKay are interviewing Belichick as if they know more about football than he does. Like, how can it would be like me going back to Harvard and I've just been head of the Harvard medical chair and I'm going to start interviewing potential doctors. Like, how in the hell is that even possible? I couldn't even know what to ask him.
And I sit here, and because of this, and, you know, seeing Bill on there on TV and doing a great job on ESPN, Pat McAfee and the like. Well, DraftKings has got a new market for Bill Belichick next year. Now, if you don't think he's going to coach again next year, okay, not this upcoming, you got to lay $3,500. If he thinks he'd coach anywhere.
I mean, look, the one thing I do know, and I think DraftKings is right at that number because his age and people are scared of him. There's no question.
But how after what we just saw?
But I will say this. Fear does the work of reason. And I really thought that the Washington Commanders needing a new stadium would have been as smart as Jerry Jones was when he hired Bill Parcells to get his stadium. Because that's why he hired Bill. He hired Bill to give himself credibility to build a stadium. And it worked.
Yeah.
Washington's going to struggle to build a stadium. Dan Quinn ain't going into the legislative offices of D.C. and saying, I need a meeting with you.
No.
That ain't happening. I like Dan, but that ain't happening. Right? Belichick walks over to the Capitol. People are going to have a meeting with him. So that's one place I thought. Same thing in Carolina. But, you know, that guy's you can't work for that guy.
David Tepper.
But I do think there'll be instances where there's going to be some sense of desperation.
The New York teams are interesting, long shots.
He's not working for the Jets. I mean, do you think he's going to go work for Woody? Seriously. I mean,
75-1.
He didn't work the Jets. That was Steve Gutman that caused him to say, you know, I don't want to be the head coach of the Jets. But look, If I were Woody, I would have fired Saleh and hired Belichick the day he got fired from New England. That would have been what I would have done. There would have been nothing. That's what Leon Hess did the minute Parcells. He understood he needed credibility. And if this thing blows up, if the ifers blow up, they're going to need credibility. And the same thing with Brian Daboll knows he's in a tough spot too because Bill's lurking out there and everybody in the Giant organization loves Bill.
Maybe Dad didn't see Dallas on the board either. We'll see how it goes with Big Mike this year down there in Big D. But it seems like that could also be a possibility if Bill wants to come back and people aren't terrified of having Bill Belichick make decisions. Why wouldn't you want Bill Belichick making decisions? I don't understand.
Well, I mean, because you got the Super Bowl winning GM Terry Fontenot. He knows how to make them.
He's got all the decisions. All right, much more to get to. Hour number two again. Chris Sims is going to join us next hour right here on the Lombardi Line.